Welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with co-host Jim Robinson. Welcome, it may be late, but welcome to the 2017 season, eh, Jim?
Hola! How are you guys doing?
A few technical issues, reason why we weren't able to do our usual post-game, our usual show during the off-season and whatnot, but we're back, even though it is coming up on week two.
My apologies, poor scheduling on my part. I was out of town the past 2 weeks.
Oh, like that's your problem.
Really wasn't able to access a place in which I could sit down and talk with Tim and go over things.
But, you have to be, you're in the middle of the woods. What else better to do than to talk on your cell phone, talk about arena football? You know what? You could have a crowd.
That's exactly why you go in the woods.
You got nature around you. You could have invited some of the bears and stuff to be a guest on the show.
We always have crickets around.
Oh, well, yeah. But the problem is those are domesticated crickets. Those aren't the those aren't crickets from the wilderness. Jiminy. No. Versus
they're much more evil.
Yeah, Jiminy versus chocolate covered. So I don't. Either way, it's been a very interesting off season. There have been many changes for a lot of people, myself included. First and foremost, I think what we want to do, Jim, is we want to give. If anybody, it was on Twitter. It was released. We want to give our heartfelt thanks to former executive VP Tom Goodhines. Ended his run with the Arena Football League after a long, long time. All I want to say is good luck to you, Tom, in your newest endeavor. I'm sure anybody who knows you will be watching very, very closely because we want to see you succeed wherever you go.
Completely second that.
Second of all, we can get into the teams. It was a very – I'm trying to use a word for the off season.
Tumultuous.
That's a very good one. I'm sure some fans would say negative. I wouldn't use that word, but I think tumultuous is probably a very good word. Interesting would be a very good word too. If you're a fan of the Arena Football League, been following it for as long as you have, the league is now down to its smallest number of teams.
Cinco.
Yep. Since the initial season. Back in 1987, with the teams that have pulled in, with the current situation, at least from what I'm seeing, it looks like the league has corrected itself. Riding the ship really isn't the right word, but I think it's corrected itself enough with the current ownership groups that they have in here and the teams that they have. Good things can happen in the Arena Football League, and we can become synonymous again with being the top indoor football league. Can I say it that way?
Can happen.
Yeah.
Can.
I think it can happen.
This is a bellwether season.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what it boils down to, bellwether season, and there's a. Hey, if we're going to go with cliches, there's a lot of marbles on the table. that's how the season is going to shape out. And I think if you're a fan of arena football and a fan of Valor are new and the Brigade are new, but Cleveland and Philly and Tampa Bay, this is a season to be all in and show your support and be positive and see what happens. I said bellwether for a purpose. I don't want to use a word make or break season. I think it has too many negative connotations to it, but bellwether is apt, and we'll see what this leads to. I think there's a lot of promising opportunities at the end of the season. We're just going to have to see if we can get there.
That's another good word too, promising. That's it. I mean, I can understand. There are their detractors. There are the fans out there, you know, of former teams who aren't very happy. And I get that. I understand that. But what you have to understand is that, you know, many people may have thought the league with only five teams, why is the league still around? Well, there are – the league is around with five teams because it can.
You sound like me with my kids. Why not? Because I told you so.
Well, I'm not trying to be a smartass about this or be smug, but I think you understand what I'm saying. There is enough in place. There's enough there, – the owners are in place where they felt that we can continue with five teams this year and then go from there. That's sort of what I mean. I wasn't trying to be an ass about it.
No, I'm just teasing. But no, that's where we're at right now. Five teams in 1 week in, and a lot of change in the off season, mm-hmm. and an exciting slate of games ahead for this season.
Right, and we were talking about the expansion clubs. What's your thought in particular about how these teams went about the off season? Coach Kokinos in Washington, Coach Smith in Baltimore. What's your take?
Well, first off, I think you have to say two very different situations. Mm-hmm. With DC coming in early and having the opportunity to get their feet on the ground.
In full year.
Versus Baltimore being a late comer.
I think they had 9 months, I think.
So there's a little bit of a disadvantage there. That being said, I really like the roster makeup of Baltimore. They're missing some pieces, and obviously arena football is a quarterback-driven league, and that's really one of the biggest pieces they're missing. But I like how they went about building the roster.
Right.
DC is very interesting to me in that it seems like a collection of players, and – I'm very happy they won their home opener.
Right.
A lot of people ask me, who are you pulling for in that game? And I said, it's tough. You know, they're both expansion teams. But I would like the home team to win that game, because you want to have a good product, and you want to have a good finale and a good result in front of your home fans. So for better or worse, I was pulling for DC in that game. And that's – as simple as a reason as it is, I wanted to see them win a home opener. And as much as I would like to see Baltimore win a home opener as well, it's always a benefit to a team to win in front of your home fans.
Right.
It's more exciting, more fun. But the structure of the DC team.
Now, by the way, you talk about DC, you said it's a bunch of players. Are you saying are you using the analogy without using the analogy? Are you saying they're a bunch of retreads? Is that what you're saying?
No. Absolutely not. Okay. No, they have some talent. They have some talented players. I think Kokinos has – Dean has a challenge ahead this season with the personalities on that team.
Okay.
Not saying he can't bring them together. They can't coalesce. But they're right now they're players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for better or worse, the way the offseason shook down – all the teams are that way.
Right.
And some teams are going to come together as a team and coalesce sooner or quicker than others. And I just see the way that team structured with their players, it could be more difficult for them.
I mean, they came off, you know, smelling like roses really when they were able to pick up Urich Meyer at the last moment. Because, you know, originally they did have, you know, they did have Tommy Grady in the dispersal draft, but they weren't able to sign him. And to be on the team, they also got the league leading. God, what isn't T.T. Tolliver?
I know they did a lot of maneuvering, and they brought a lot of different people in to get excitement going.
Yeah, Mike Washington, who years ago seemed like he was a cast off, had an amazing year over in China,
an amazing first week as well,
and an amazing first week.
We'll get to that. Yeah. So they've got talent. They have talent. I just sometimes a team is greater than the sum of its parts. Well, I think the jury's still out on that one.
Yeah.
And we'll see what goes on there. And I think they have enough talent to succeed. I just hope they don't get tripped up along the way and implode.
Right. And by the way, I want to give – while we're talking quickly about the Valor, I want to give props out to the guys over at the one of the newest team-centric podcasts, the guys over at Valor Hour.
Very nice.
Yeah, for the guys to come in and, like they have, and to talk about the team, which it seems like some of them are novices with arena football, some of them aren't, but I want to give them props and a little bit of a shout-out also, obviously. If we can – you know, chat with them, we will do so over the next couple of weeks. We'll be more than happy to have them on the show, and vice versa, obviously. But props to them on getting it up. And it was 3 weeks. They're already in the third episode, man. To talk about an expansion club, that could be tough.
Yeah, it can be. It can be really tough. They're, you know, you don't have a lot of background to talk about.
Yeah. Now, Baltimore. Now, you were talking about teams and stuff like that. Is it fair to say that this team, that Baltimore and Coach Smith built this team around – Reggie Gray, or as you said, is it, you know, what's the old saying? Can't remember it now. Do you think that's what they've done, or is it just more than that?
No, I don't think this team is built around Reggie Gray at all. Reggie Gray, he's been a great player in this league, but that's not the Reggie Gray team. I think
Laquan Williams last week too, which will.
I gotta say, I didn't get to watch because of where I was much of the games, and I got to see just a little bit. I was intrigued about Laquan Williams with the Brigade. That's someone I'm looking forward to watching the next couple weeks and seeing how he progresses and how he adjusts to the indoor game. But I'm excited about him. Their biggest problem, I mean, it's quite obvious, is the quarterback situation.
As they found out within the first quarter, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. For all intents and purposes, that they would have been in that game and maybe could have won that game if they had better quarterback play. But that aside, this team was built. I think Omar went about building this team with from a foundation perspective. Rather than getting stars and studs, and that's not to besmudge Reggie Gray, who we just spoke about. Reggie Gray is there, but he's part of the foundation rather than putting him on a pedestal outside before we finish the building behind us.
Right.
If that analogy makes any sense.
Oh yeah, it does.
but they got a tough road without. With the quarterback play right now, you know, whether it's Carden or it's Cartwright, I'm sure he's going to Smith is going to bring somebody else in and try and push those guys. They just don't have a lot of experience there. And, it doesn't matter how good your receivers are, how good your offensive line is. If you don't have a lot of experience under center, you're going to have a struggle.
Yeah.
And,
But Baltimore and DC this year are not your normal expansion clubs, any way, shape, or form.
Very different. Yeah, very, very different. I do like the defense there. They got going in Baltimore. We'll see these next couple weeks. It's the first week's always tough. Teams come out sloppy.
No preseason kind of does that.
Yeah. So when the Valor jumped out on the Brigade, and then the second half comes and the Brigade kind of come back, you're going to expect to see some of that. That stuff will shake out in week 2, 3, 4, mostly 3 and 4, and you'll start to see, okay, this team's able to overcome this hump or overcome this issue or that problem. And,
right.
Or that team's just going to struggle till they can figure out how to fix that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what these two teams can do. Obviously, I think it'll help for Baltimore. They have to go through four straight weeks before they have their home opener versus Tampa, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So it'll be interesting. Now, talk about the other teams in the league. What about with the change, especially some head coaching changes amongst two of the three remaining teams? You have a new head coach in Ron Zaleski in Cleveland after Coach Tunn left the franchise, and then there is in Tampa Bay bringing over
Ron James.
Coach Ron James, what's your
and they squared off week one. I think I don't know what happened with Coach Tun up in Cleveland. I don't know if it was health related. He had some health issues during last season. I don't know if it was that or
I remember it was scary.
Yeah. So, but regardless, Cleveland made the change. They went with Ron Selesky, who had been there for a long time, and he good evaluator of talent, able to put together a really good defense that has a lot of experience in the league. And then Ron James coming to Tampa Bay, a lot of experience, knows how to coach up the offensive line and put together, I'd say, a solid offense. And he knows how to inspire guys and I'd say, bring a team together. The biggest changes for those organizations, I think, is in Cleveland, Selesky has a different vibe than Coach Tun. Mm-hmm. And it seems the players already knew him, so the buy-in to me isn't a steep ascent because they already know who he is. And for a great part of last season, due to the health of Coach Tun, who's now in D.C., Selesky was doing the halftime talks and coaching the players up and on the sideline. So that's not so much new. Whereas Ron James is a complete different take on what's going on the field.
Yeah.
In the game and at practice in Tampa Bay,
and both him and Selesky have their own type of pedigree when it comes to arena football. But they know their game. That's the thing.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see. And I think the biggest thing for the Storm is Ron James is guiding he's in the saddle. Okay. He has the reins in his hand. Whereas in the past, those coaches, whether it was Dave Ewer or Lawrence Samuels, didn't have that ability to do that.
Right.
And so so with that comes greater he reaps better benefits. And if there's failures, that's more on him.
Yeah.
Because he has more control.
With great power comes greater responsibility.
Exactly, that's the word I was looking for there. I think it's exciting, and it was good for them that he got off on the right foot in Cleveland, and they got a W, and not only that, they got a win on the road. They haven't, if memory serves me, they haven't won a game on the road since 2015. That's a long streak.
That is a long streak. That is a long streak.
They needed that.
Real quickly, when it comes to the rosters for these two teams, and we can talk about the Arena Bowl champion Philadelphia Soul. What's your take on the quarterback situation in both these cities? Let's look at Cleveland in particular. Arvell Nelson, at least through today, when he was reassigned to the Cleveland Gladiators, they were going with two. We can't say unknown QBs in Cleveland. One is...
Well, that situation is more complicated than that. It's not about just the QBs. You have to look at Arvell Nelson and his past history as a player. Mm-hmm. And then to answer this question that you're going to ask me.
Well, I would say, you're looking at the quarterback situation in Cleveland. You know, they bring in a young Tanner Marsh, who played the last three seasons with the Montreal Alouettes of the CFL. I've seen him play, obviously, being from Montreal. I'm high on him, and I'm glad he's getting another shot to play football. But, yes, he will have to learn the game. There are anybody who's seen the CFL and the AFL, even though there's a difference in quite a few yards in the field itself, there are quite a few similarities between the two games, something that Tanner will have to get used to. Then you also have to deal, you know, with Shane Boyd. Now, it's a matter of, you know, the two differences between – it's funny. It's like Arvell Nelson is the slash type of player, being the DB and the QB. And then Shane Boyd, who is, you know, just a straight-out quarterback, from what we saw last week, they didn't win.
Well, I think you have to go back to first. Obviously, you have a new head coach in town.
Yeah.
And so – maybe he wasn't enamored with Nelson at quarterback. I've asked some people and haven't gotten answers on this, so I don't know the answer. I don't know why Nelson was gone. I would hazard the guess that Selesky was just that much more impressed with Shane Boyd during preseason.
Well, I say and Tanner Marsh.
And liked what Tanner Marsh showed, having very little experience in the preseason, and decided to go that route. Mm-hmm. Now, bringing back Nelson this week, obviously it was when they had that separation, it was amicable because he's back already. I'm guessing that has to do with all the injuries they suffered in the backfield versus Tampa Bay.
Yeah, huge.
Particularly since they put Kizer on IR.
That's a huge thing that came over the wire today from the league. Yeah.
Yeah, and then his name slipped my mind. The other defense back they put on inactive reserve, which means realistically he's
Fred Obi.
Yeah, Fred Obi. He may be able to go, may not. It's more like a game time decision. So I'm guessing they're going to shift Terrence Moore over and put Nelson in at Jack, or at least start Moore at Jack and have the backup who was inactive get the reps in practice this week. And then you have Nelson who's able to come in and play Jack. Yes. And my guess is until they get that figured out, we might not even know. I mean, we can look at the reports the league sends out as far as the practice reports, but we probably won't know until an hour or two before game time which direction they're going to go. I'm guessing they did not bring Nelson back to play quarterback.
I kind of agree with you because I saw
at this point.
Yeah, I saw the things like, oh, they're bringing in a third quarterback, and then you and I were talking, you know, pre-show, and I was like, yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten that this had occurred.
Well, they listed him on the release
as a QB
on their website as a Jack linebacker.
I know, but on the league actually put it as the QB, put him as QB.
Well, they might not just that's where he was last year. They might not have updated that. Right. The title of the release though from Cleveland said Jack linebacker.
Okay,
so that would tell me a little bit more about it.
Right.
And so it'll be interesting. You know, and you look at Boyd's last week. I think he went for 288 and about 64-65% completion percentage. Yeah. And I didn't get to watch the whole game. I only got to see about 20 minutes. The time that I saw, he didn't look particularly sharp. But even with all that we've just talked about, I don't see that's why they brought Nelson back. I was a little surprised it was Boyd, considering his past in Arizona and San Antonio and Tampa Bay. He has highs and lows, and it doesn't seem like there's a good equilibrium of play there. So they have some things they're going to have to work through there, and hopefully – I mean, he's a pro. He's going to work hard at his game. I've got to know him, and he's a good individual, and he works hard at his craft. So, you know, it's just going to be for Cleveland, can we get him to this level of equilibrium where the highs – we like the highs, but the lows aren't so low.
Right.
And can we get to a better medium of production, consistent production throughout a game? Because they have some talented receivers. They're able to do things on offense, but they have to find a consistency. But this goes back. It was week one. Everyone's kind of rusty. Nobody had any preseason games or scrimmages. So the first 2 weeks of the season, you could see a lot of up and downs with teams before they kind of find their rhythm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. It's just – again, it comes to preseason. But we'll see how the teams handle it. Obviously, speaking of coming in with no preseason, coming in week two, Philadelphia, you know, the Arena Bowl champion, Philadelphia Soul, are going to be playing their first game this week. They just received their championship rings, which if you check on social media, they're absolutely gorgeous. Coach Dozell, what does he have to do this year to make sure that the Philadelphia Souls stay the Arena Bowl champions? Because
maintain. Largely, they bring back a good portion of the team they won the championship with.
Yeah.
Missing Tracy Belton leaving and going to D.C., the dog that he is, to use Dozell's words, that hurts a little bit. It always hurts to lose a defensive back of that caliber. But the other one is Jake Metz going to the Bills.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how long he'll stay there. My hope and desire is he sticks. You know, because that's good for the league, and that's good for Jake, and that's good for the soul.
But what you've got to understand, too, with Jake also, my thought, too, you know, it's great that he, you know, another AFL alum makes it to the NFL. Is he just going to be training camp fodder? They haven't even gone through their draft yet.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Hopefully he sticks. So I didn't look, but he probably signed a futures contract. So we'll see what happens there. There's a good chance he might come back to the Soul, but hopefully he doesn't, and he's stuck on the roster, you know, and that's a good thing. But the for the most part, though, they have a new offensive lineman. Otherwise, you know, they really have the same team. So it's about maintaining, and I don't see an issue offensively. Dozell has already said, you know, he's turning over a lot of authority and responsibility at the quarterback position about the offense. So I think, you know, that is huge.
I think Coach Dell just wants Radabaugh to make sure that they don't want to become complacent. Because yeah, if you become complacent in any league and any sport, you're gonna get your ass handed to you.
Yeah, and so this I think this is that's a great way for him to do that with Dan, keep him engaged. You know, he talked about Dan down the road wanting to become a coach, and this is a way to help teach him and let him learn, and he oversees it. And well, you know what? That's as a head coach, you're a CEO. You oversee. You let people do their jobs.
Right.
So for Dozell to do that, I think that speaks volumes for him. But I think it speaks volumes for Dan, in that the trust Dozell has in him to go that route. And I think the offense will be fine. Hopefully the line comes together for them. Defensively, missing Belton and the defense lineman, that's going to hurt.
And so late in the year, but so late in the preseason too, when you think exactly that your rosters are set.
And the guy they have coming in, Dozell likes what he saw in John Sheehy, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly, John. I'm assuming it's Sheehy. But he's a rookie, and so he's going to have to acclimate himself. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting for them coming down to Tampa Bay this week. You're going to see. I think for them, the big test is going to be on the defensive side of the ball and see where they're at there. And the biggest reason I say that is, you know, they had a good offensive line last year. They're going to have a good offensive line this year. Mikel Benson is probably going to be the top fullback in the league this year. I haven't got a chance to see him. We'll see this week. But if he plays like he did last year, isn't any reason he shouldn't be. But on the defensive side, Bo Bell's getting up there in age. He struggled with some injuries last year.
Right.
It was interesting how they handled Joe Goosby in the dispersal draft, because they left him unprotected and then traded back to get him. So that gives me different thoughts on what they think about where he's at right now. Mm-hmm. And so that's their linebacker position. And then they're replacing Tracy Belton at the defensive back position. So we'll see. And they're going to get a test this week against Joe Hills. And we'll see how they handle that. And I think that'll give not just Tampa Bay Storm, but Joe Hills individually, it give all the fans a good indication of where that Philadelphia Soul defense is at for this season.
Right. Before we get into the games this week, we do want to at least talk about that the league is, even though there are the small number of teams that the league has this year, there is still going to be a presence on national television, and actually something new this year. The league is going to be on the CBS Sports Network. There is going to be a full slate of games every single week during the regular season and the in the playoffs, which obviously we're glad to see. One of the changes this year is for Baltimore and for Washington is that they are going to have a prominent place on the Monumental Sports Network. Where they're going to show, as long as the games are not being shown on the CBS Sports Network, that's where you're going to see one of those two games. If not, sorry, either one of those teams, could be one a week, could be both. But they are available there. I know that they have a free 3-month trial that you can sign up and watch those teams play. But also, I guess we could say it's an added bonus. This is something that we've seen with other leagues do, but we have never have been able to experience it ourselves, is direct feed from the league website for AFL Live, whether that be through, and they had some great stuff this past week, from streaming it directly on Facebook to having it directly on the arenafootball.com website, even having it on YouTube. That's through their network partner, Sports Rocket, and through Network A. I will admit to say, Jim, that to me, again, it was a long time coming, and I'm actually loving this type of partnership a lot
more. Exciting new day.
Yeah,
a new day.
A lot more than the ESPN3, there was a lot of limitations to people like myself who do not live in the continental U.S. and is limited by, unfortunately, you know, being blocked. So
you mean walls at borders?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. yes.
I jest.
Yeah. I was happy to see it. I hope it continues. It looks like the league is planning on having a game that's going to be streamed each week through the league website, and from what it seems, and this is just speculation on my part, Jim, that the way
Like there's one CBS Sports Network game and one stream game each week.
Right. But what I mean
essentially.
But what I mean is that even though the game itself is going to be on MSN, the Baltimore Cleveland game is still going to be broadcast very similar to how they did it last week, which is basically identical to how they did it on ESPN3 last year. That when the games weren't televised, is it in-house with radio, the radio feed, if they have radio feed. And that's
The teams are doing it on their own website, right?
Yeah.
My understanding was the Storms had their game last week through the Tampa Bay Storm website. You could go watch it.
Yeah, and YouTube, Facebook, and the company Network A was doing highlight packages. I'm like, highlight packages?
That's what?
Something we've never seen. And almost real time. So it's props, and people may say, "Well, you waited too long to announce all these things." No, certain things take time. Eyes, T's. They have to be
dotted and crossed.
Yeah, they have to be had to be completed and has to be done right. It is a change. You know, they got away from CBS Interactive. They switch over to ViewLift, who's now doing the league website. And you know, the partnerships, I think, are a very positive thing to see. So it's props. I get to watch.
Well, like we said, this season is a bellwether. We'll see. There's a lot to be shown for the season and see what steps can be taken. And so as fans, I think it's, for lack of a better word, incumbent upon us to encourage these steps and be positive about these steps and be positive about looking towards the future in the hopes that these steps pay off.
I couldn't have said it better. So we are a week late. We did have games last week. We had the two expansion teams meet and the expand one. I guess when's the last time that we had two expansion teams in the same year for their very, very first game?
I don't recall.
I'd have to look that up.
somebody tweeted that. I don't remember who tweeted that.
All I do know is that for the kickoff in the DMV.
DMV.
That's the Washington, D.C. area, Baltimore, Virginia. First time that in was almost 27 years that there was a kickoff, since 1990 that there was a kickoff of arena football in the DMV. I was like, wow.
Well, I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, and you talked about it. I won't be able to talk much about the game since I was next to a pine tree when DC played Baltimore, and I was next to an oak tree when Tampa Bay played Cleveland. But I was able to catch a couple minutes of each game, and I'm going to get caught up.
Hey, YouTube, baby. It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube. Yeah, the game of the week was between the two expansion clubs on CBS Sports Network. Crowd itself was very promising. Over 15,000, and from what I've seen with a lot of the stories that have been written.
It looked great. Yeah. You saw people in the third deck.
Yeah.
That looked awesome.
Yeah. I can't remember what – I don't remember what the Verizon Center holds specifically for arena football or for hockey.
I said that was like 15-2, 15-4 for that game.
Okay. But from what we've seen, you know, even though Baltimore started off as poorly as they did, I think it was a very good start for both these teams. You know, we're going to see a little bit of rust. Same thing with the next team with Cleveland and Tampa Bay, but overall, you know, with Washington coming away with the win, it's a positive start for DC.
Yes,
Baltimore itself, they have their chance this week versus Cleveland.
I like how Baltimore came back mm-hmm. in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. That's the portion I got to see. I was impressed with that their effort and play there, and from what I heard. Impressed with how DC opened the game up, and happy DC, you know, just happy DC won the game because they were the home team and between two expansion teams. You want to see that in front of your home crowd,
right? No, it's true. Second game of the week was the Tampa Bay Cleveland matchup. Another great crowd for Cleveland. Just seems that Cleveland is always drawing them in. I think it's just
Cleveland rocks.
Yeah. Good. Just a thank you, Drew Carey. I think it's just a shade less than 13,000. Yeah, just 13,000. Yeah, Tampa Bay looked very, very good. You know, it's for any Tampa Bay Storm fan to go, especially yourself too, being a Tampa native, having to go through what they did last year, you know, could basically spell the end of a franchise. Especially a storied franchise like the Tampa Bay Storm, and in their 25th season too, man, on top of that. But they seem to have turned the corner. I know it's only 1 week, but this team looks to be head and shoulders above already of that 2-win team from last year.
Well, I think first and foremost, the most obvious thing people will point to is Joe Hill's coming back, and there's no doubt he's best receiver in the league, and he's dynamic. But I personally think James has done a good – Coach James, sorry, Ron, has done a good job of
that's hilarious.
Increasing the play on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And the biggest part of that is that you have Randy Hipper behind it. And Randy – my biggest question mark with Randy was not his ability but his knee. Coming into the first game of the season, where was he at? I got to see him during training camp, and he looked good, but that's not game situation what I saw. So that question always kind of lingers, and the knee seemed to be all right. And as long as that line can protect him, what he did in Orlando the last two seasons. After leaving Tampa Bay and his accuracy, mm-hmm. if he can continue to do that, it's going to lead to good things for Tampa Bay this season. Especially when you have Joe Hills on the outside, and then the addition of Lamarck Brown, who was super solid in Week One.
Oh, no kidding, no kidding.
And then you have a dynamic player like Kendrick Ings, who can explode at any moment. It adds to their offense, and that's something they just haven't had. And that's not a knock on like the T.T. Tolivers, because he's just so awesome and solid and consistent. He's going to do what he does, but one guy can't carry a team.
No,
you need to come together as a group, and they haven't had that the past couple seasons. I can see the beginnings of that now. We'll see this weekend when they play Philadelphia. We'll see what they look like this week.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know, for real or, hey, yeah, let's wait a little bit and see. We got a little more work to do, or, oh boy, where are we going with this?
That's it. Yeah, it's like anywhere from the first 2 weeks, maybe it may look like preseason, but.
But I'm leaning towards, I've got a lot of confidence in that offense right now. And I know Ron Selesky does a really good job defensively, and you know, that offense output in week one wasn't stupendous, but you know, you got a chance to work some kinks out and get through some things. And the star player offensively was Lamar Brown in that game.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not Joe Hills or the dynamic, shifty, speedy receiver, kick returner, Kendrick Ings. We'll see this week with Philadelphia. It's going to be a better test, and it will really tell us where they're at, because like we talked about earlier, Philly predominantly returns the same team they had last year.
It's true. And you know, with the fewer teams, I think you and I decided that why not, we might as well go ahead and show some recognition when it comes to the players of the week. And I'm sure if we have any issues, we'll we'll basically say, well, why?
Why not?
Yeah. For the players of the week this week, for week one, it went to Washington's Mike Washington for the offensive player of the week. And the defensive player of the week went to Caesar Rayford. At first, when I saw the offensive player of the week, I was like, I was actually offended. Cut that one out. I was thinking, well, what about Joe Hills? And then I went back and checked. It's like, okay, it was fair. It was, to me, it was well deserved, because
very much so.
And Washington had more yards. He had about 100 more yards.
Even more than that, I don't know. I might be just a sucker for this, but something for him having caught the first touchdown in Valor history and having a big game.
Right.
It'd be one thing if someone else had caught it and that was like they had two catches for 18 yards and one touchdown. But he had the first catch. He had three touchdowns, 112 yards. You know, deservedly so. Mike deserved to get the recognition for week one.
Defensive player of the week. Just looking at Rayford's stats for the week.
Sick.
Yeah, pretty sick, dude. I mean, what, three tackles, two assists. 1.5 sacks for a total of 9 yards and a fumble recovery.
He had a sack fumble, so he had a forced fumble.
There it is, forced fumble.
That's and right. Then he had the interception return for a touchdown.
Yes, yeah. So I mean,
that's
looking at ones that were somewhat similar to that. I mean, you know, I had Rayshon Kaiser with the INT. You had Daryl Cato Bishop. He had a sack and a
Tracy Belton had two picks.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think the kicker for Caesar was the interception for a touchdown.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing bigger in the stats than a touchdown.
Oh yeah, pick and then, six. Yeah,
you know, interception, forced fumble, the sacks, all around solid effort.
Because I'm looking to see if he, when it came to other defensive stats, if anybody really stood out. Josh Victorin had 6 tackles and an assist.
You know what, though? When you just
Kareem
look
Smith
at stats,
Kareem Smith at 2 sacks.
Kareem Smith, yeah, he had a good game. He had a good game, 2 sacks. But 2 sacks versus a sack and a half.
Yeah, you know, it's Caesar Rayford.
Fumble.
Well-deserved. Yeah. Well-deserved.
Yeah. It's always interesting. I remember for years we would always send in every PR guy from a team. Was send in their own submissions. And I didn't always submit guys from my team. I would submit guys from other teams. And you would make a case. And they would, in the league office, they would take them and they would take all that information, bring it together when they made the decision. And so It's always interesting who gets it. And then, you know, to be fair, to some of these players, there are some deserving players who don't get it. And part of it's because their PR staff just doesn't do a good job.
Well, it also got me. That's very fair, because it goes to remember that, you know, I was lucky enough to take part in the year-end voting last year. And it's true. I mean, you really can't make a case that you make a case between each other. You know, us who were on the team to choose or take part in, you know, for media to choose the award winners. So I know it's true, and it's when you really don't get a choice when you're voting at a game post, you know, for a post game awards. You know, it's this one's a little bit bigger, obviously.
Well, see, that's the biggest difference. Just because you have winners and post game awards,
yeah,
doesn't mean that's automatic for the league awards.
Oh, no, true. No, it's true.
So that's a big thing to clear up.
It's also been slimmed down, though. Remember, as I said before, it's also been slimmed down quite a bit this year.
Yeah, it's been definitely slimmed down. But there's a lot of times where you have to, for the game, you have to turn those awards in before the end of the game. And sometimes there's times when you do that and you're like, could be player A, it could be player B. Everyone seems to be on player A's side, so we'll go with player A. And then that last 38 seconds, player B makes a spectacular player, but you're already sent your stuff in. So there's the team awards. So that's where, as a PR guy, you go back and you communicate with the league and say, well, here's how we see things from this game, and here's how we see things from other games.
Right.
And then there's take all that information and collect it, and then based on that, make the selection for the league awards for the week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's incumbent on – I've seen people, like, upset and argue about it. And there's always going to be arguments. But the point is, that's incumbent on the team PR staff to go about and push forward the players for the week.
Right.
And – they have to be honest about it, because there are times there are players on my team when I was doing it, and I look at them like, you had a really good game. You didn't have the best game of the week. And you got to be able to do that, and you have to say it succinctly and make your point.
Right. And usually it can be more than just – it is just more than stat. I mean, yes, it is – what, 70 – what can we say? It's fair to say 75% stats and 25% other.
You know what? It's mostly based on stats, because let's be honest, most PR people aren't football people. But there are times where it's not based on stats. I remember 2007, might have been 2007 or 2008. Tim McGill won Defensive Player of the Week, and I wrote a long paragraph on why he should win it, and he didn't win Defensive Player of the Game from the reporters and everything. But I sent that in. He ended up winning it, and he didn't even have a sack or a tackle in the game, but he won Defensive Player of the Week, and it was because of all the pressures he had and the dominance he had from his position on affecting the quarterback. That to be honest, it was evident when you watched the tape. If you watch the film of that game and you watch the tape, it was evident. So it wasn't hard. I just had to articulate it, and he ended up winning Defensive Player of the Week,
right,
in which he accumulated no stats. Okay. He didn't have a sack. He didn't have a PBU. He didn't have most teams do a horrible job of pressure. So that's he had a ton of pressures, but he didn't have a tackle. He didn't have an interception, a forced fumble, or a fumble recovery.
Right.
So there are times in which you're correct. Most of the time it's stat-driven, but there are times when you can make that argument, and then they pull the tape up and they go, holy cow, was dominant.
Yeah.
And it can go that way for a cornerback as well. He might not have a pass breakup or an interception, but he was just so dominant in his coverage, and he did so well in covering people and making those tackles that he deserved at least a game award, if not a week award.
Interesting.
So it can happen, but you're for what you said, you're predominantly right. It's mostly stat driven.
Yeah. To remind everybody, if you didn't know already, to just remind, since this is the first show of the year, there are multiple ways that you can contact us here at AFL Tonight. Obviously, you can head over to the Arena Fan message boards and chime in over there. But yeah, we have our Twitter account at AFL Tonight, also at Arena Fan. Arena Fan on Twitter also. There is the Arena Fan Facebook page. The shows this year, at least for the first show, is going to be available on iTunes and Google Play Music. We are still trying to set up the SoundCloud account. We're looking to see if that's going to be feasible this year. But we will let you know for future shows. So just for the reference, first show will be available only on those two platforms. Finally, not as many games as we usually have, but we do have games, obviously. First game of the week is going to be the CBS Sports Network game of the week, and it is going to be the hold on a second here.
Philadelphia at Tampa Bay.
Thank you, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay. Philadelphia is their first game of the year. I mean, do you expect them to be rusty out of the gate?
To be honest, I expect every team to be rusty out of the gate. And I think even Clint or Coach Dozell alluded to that in a recent interview he did in Philadelphia, is that, he saw an advantage in that Tampa Bay already played a game and they were able to get the kinks out.
Right.
And there's a lot to be said for that. They haven't had the chance to do that, particularly when you don't have preseason games or intramural scrimmage or something of that nature. It can be tough, and it can be even tougher when that first game of the season is on the road. You got to travel, disruptions with family and everything else. It's hard to say. Short answer, yes. Short answer, yes. How Philly handles it, if we had a Philly insider that could give us a little bit of a scoop, we would know better. But I would expect, they're going to handle it well. They're all veterans on that team predominantly. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the same team, but they haven't had that chance of the first hit, the first contact of competition, et cetera. And there's something to be said for that. So – yes, I would expect a little rust out of them. I think it comes down to how much has Tampa Bay improved, and did they improve enough to take advantage of that rust?
Our friends over at Massey love using them as a good gauge when it comes to the sports lines each week. Massey has a Philadelphia favorite by 6.5 points. But mind you, if you look what happened last week with the 13.5 points in which Cleveland was favored by.
That was a bad spread.
Yeah, that was a bad spread. Second game of the week on Saturday is the Cleveland-Baltimore matchup. It will be broadcast on Monumental Sports Network, and it should be also be broadcast via the league website. I think that's arenafootball.com/live or arenafootball.com/AFL-live, if I remember correctly.
Let me chime in on that.
Yeah, yes.
We don't know specifics just yet, but the NBA just announced the Cavaliers schedule.
Okay.
So there could be a change to that game.
Okay. Do we know when the Cavaliers are scheduled to play?
The Cavaliers are scheduled to play 3 p.m. on Saturday.
Ooh.
Which would mean a 7 p.m. game on Saturday is probably not feasible.
Okay. All right.
So just let our fans know. My educated guess would be a Sunday afternoon game, but we'll see. We understand there's an announcement to come out tomorrow from the league, and we'll know more then.
Okay. So stay tuned to all of our social media channels at arenafan.com, and we will keep you up to date if there is going to be a change. So the game is going to be on Monumental, and it's going to be on the league on the league streaming. Massey has them at Cleveland at a 6.5 point clip. By the way, 103.5 so far on the over under Philadelphia, by the way, Tampa Bay, only at 98.5.
Really?
Yeah. Because I remember they were saying, I think the Washington-Baltimore game last week was around – I can go back and check. They had it at 102.
Is that I would flip those. I think the Philly Storm game is going to be more high scoring than the Cleveland DC game. Or I'm sorry, the Cleveland Baltimore game.
Seems fair.
And I like Cleveland by that spread. I'm not sold on the quarterback situation in Baltimore just yet. They have some things to figure out, and it's going to be a struggle for them until they get that worked out.
Yeah. No, it will be interesting if obviously Cleveland wants to get their first win of the year. They are a little banged up on the defensive side of the ball. So it'll be interesting. Obviously, Cleveland wants to get their first win. It'll be Coach Selesky's first head coaching win since 2004, I think. AFL win, I think, 2004. I think. it's been a long time coming for Coach. I would probably go Philadelphia, and I would probably take Cleveland this week. Again, it's just a matter of.
I'll take Cleveland in the spread, and I think I'll take the Storm straight up.
I think it'll be a closer game though. Tampa Bay and Philadelphia will be a close game, in my opinion.
It's tough. I think Philly's the better team right now, but they haven't played
on paper. That's the thing. They're on paper.
Better team on paper, but they haven't played. So we just got to see how quickly they shake the rust off and. The live action and the speed, you know, how quickly they get acclimated.
Yeah. And the last thing we want to talk about, we still have to make our who's going to meet in the Arena Bowl this year. If you were to make a choice right now, Jim, who would it be?
Philadelphia.
Okay.
Oh, that's the easy one.
Yeah. I'm going with that one too.
Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia, Tampa Bay.
I was actually thinking Philadelphia, Cleveland.
I might have gone there, but after seeing, I didn't get to see much, but seeing and reading and talking about the first week, talking to people, I've elevated Tampa Bay a little bit over Cleveland.
Okay.
But then again, first two weeks, let's see how it shakes out.
Exactly. So we are glad to be back for our 17th season of AFL Tonight. Keep an eye on all of our social media channels and if there are any changes or updates to the broadcasting, etc. And if there are any questions, you can actually contact me at ArenaFan at tim.capper at arenafan.com for any ideas. But we hope to bring you a very good season for this 2017 season and the 30th anniversary of the Arena Football League. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more next week. We want to give our thoughts on the 30th anniversary.
Send questions in, please.
Yes.
We love them.
So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces. Bye-bye.